You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
As predicted, the vote on the Suns Arena deal got pushed back to January. Good morning to you. Happy Thursday. We kick the show off with that discussion.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive.
Yeah, the question is what happens next, all right? So what happened yesterday? Well, this Phoenix City Council decided to delay a vote on a potential $230 million deal to renovate the Suns Arena until late January. Now, despite there still being no deal to renovate Talking Stick Resort Arena, the Phoenix Suns are looking to stay in downtown Phoenix until 2037, at least. That's according to team president Jason Rowley.
And Mr. Rowley was making the rounds and talking. We have a little bit of his comments he made on KTR. Was this with Mac and Gatos yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, with Mac and Gatos making the argument, the pitch as to why this is an investment and not an expenditure. Is that a nice way to put it?
Yeah, exactly. He talked about where the money would go for this.
The infrastructure pieces, the plumbing, the electrical, the security systems, the vertical circulation, the escalators, widening of the concourses for safety. We are covering the other components that would be more fan-facing, fan amenity, club spaces, bars, things of that nature. We are covering those costs.
Okay, so that's where he says the money would go to. Now, the team president, Jason Rowley, also went on to discuss the rumors, I guess you could say, Bruce, out there that the owner, Sarver.
Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns.
Has, would you say threatened?
I would say, I don't think it's unfair to call, use the term, but he apparently called and threatened city council members, government officials, that if this deal didn't pass, if they didn't give this money and redo the arena, that he would take his ball, literally the Suns basketball, and leave.
Possibly Vegas, possibly Seattle. Here's what Rowley, the team president, had to say about that.
I'm not going to speculate on that one bit because we are focused right now, and what we have said again and again and again is that our option A, B, and C is to continue to operate the building and have the Phoenix Suns continue to be the NBA team in this market.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the position they should take. I was a bit surprised with the reports coming out yesterday that the owner had threatened to take the team, like you said, take his ball and go somewhere else. Because at that point in time, how do you get the current Sun fan base that has been hanging on through, what, only four wins this season? Is that where we're at right now, Super Producer CVC?
4-24.
4-24, okay. Yeah. So there are still people that are going to the games. There are still some season ticket holders. How do you come out and say, well, you know what? If we don't get this, we may move the team and then expect those fans to still show up for games.
To support your team, a lame duck team, for lack of a
term. So that was surprising to me on the owner's position yesterday. What the team president...
It's an emotional response and it's not probably rooted in a lot of business sense.
Yeah, but you got when you're talking millions upon millions of dollars, you got to be careful with your emotions. So when the team president comes out and says, I'm not going to speculate... That's kind of what I would expect the company line to be, so to speak.
Can we say a small prayer for Mr. Rowley, who had to go out and try to clean this up yesterday? He had to go out and basically argue that his boss didn't say what he said he said.
Well, you know what? He also talked a little bit about the arena and why he's advocating that the city pony up a bunch of cash. Take a listen.
Let's pretend the Suns never even existed.
Okay.
This building's 26 years old. If you want to continue to have concerts and the other 200 community events that happen in the building, if you want to have a world-class town hall, if you will, those dollars have to be expended.
I'm going to take Mr. Rowley at his word and believe that think that he believes every word of that, okay? Disney on Ice is coming, by the way. They're presenting the Dare to Dream tour, Disney on Ice.
I think we all are aware. Aren't you going? I got my tickets.
I'm going every night, January 17th through the 20th at Talking Stick Resort Arena.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence that Disney on Ice has threatened not to bring their Dare to Dream ice extravaganza to the Talking Stick Resort Arena if they don't spend $200 million plus to renovate it? Is there any evidence of that? is Royal Rumble not going to come? I'm literally looking at the events there. WWE SmackDown Live. Bob Seger is coming in the Silver Bullet Band.
Bob Seger.
We've got Justin Timberlake. That one may be off. He's having throat problems. I know. Joel and Victoria Osteen. Here's where Mr. Rowley's argument falls short. Let's assume the Suns didn't exist, like he said. 81 nights is what the Suns play in that venue. 81 nights a year.
Well, technically 41, because there's 82 seasons.
Game. You're right. Yeah. 41 home games. I apologize.
Correct.
You're right. I was thinking baseball.
It's even worse.
41 home games, and there's 200 other events. Is there any evidence that of these 200 other events, they would not be holding their event in Talking Stick Resort Arena if this money wasn't spent? I can't find any evidence of that. Do you see what I'm saying? That if the argument is, if they don't spend this money, this what, building implodes and we don't have concerts there anymore? Well, then why are there concerts scheduled through the next year?
Do you understand the argument, though, that I believe Mr. Rowley and the city official we had
on Kids
on
the Block
last
are coming
week.
In May, by the way.
Oh, good night.
I know you want tickets.
For Christmas, please. Yeah. Oh, I'm just hoping and praying. But do you understand the argument? The city of Phoenix, like it or not, Bruce, entered into kind of a landlord-tenant relationship.
Because the city of Phoenix owns the building.
With the Phoenix Suns.
I can acknowledge that.
And as a landlord, you are responsible for certain upkeep of said facility.
There is a minimum expectation that the air conditioning works and that the toilets flush.
So why wouldn't the city be responsible for at least some cost of renovation and upkeep to the Talking Stick Resort Arena?
I would make the argument. Okay, I got two different arguments.
Okay.
If you believe the city should be a landlord and own an entertainment venue in downtown Phoenix, of which I do not believe, but if you want to acknowledge that, yes, the city would have to keep the building up to code, safety standards. Again, the plumbing works. Do you know what I'm saying? When you flip the little light, the lights come on. You'd have to have a working venue in order to have these other events. Disney on Ice, Royal Rumble, Justin Timberlake. He is so gifted. I mean, seriously. Anyway, you would have to do that as a minimum. I find it hard to believe that that number is $285 million.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
So there's probably something in the middle. What would be the amount they would have to do? Now, I would turn around and tell you, my argument is, and I think I'm on the Sal DiCicio side of this argument, Councilman DiCicio. Why is the city of Phoenix in the business of being a landlord of a concert/sports venue in downtown Phoenix? Why is it the role of government, and how is it the role of government, to provide an entertainment and sports venue for its citizens? Are you telling me that if the city of Phoenix did not own that building, Justin Timberlake wouldn't come to Phoenix? I would argue, yes, he would.
It was a decision that the council and the people of Phoenix, I would assume, made decades ago. When the arena was first built. So now we're dealing with the decisions that were made decades ago.
I will agree with that. And I think that the times, they have a change. And the promises that were made on the huge economic impact of building these venues has never come to fruition. Well, let me put it this way. So if you believe that it's government's responsibility to provide entertainment venues, is it their responsibility to provide restaurants? Should the city of Phoenix own restaurants in downtown Phoenix? Should they buy hotels so that people can come in? I mean, where does that end? Why just this? Here's my solution. You ready? For sale. 26-year-old, slightly used concert venue for sale in downtown Phoenix. Make us an offer. No reasonable offer will be refused.
You understand, though, that with the arena being down there, the city is creating economic development because while they're not in the restaurant industry, several restaurants have opened up around the arena where the city benefits from the revenues of that. And while they're not in the hotel business, they do have a convention center that has sparked growth of different hotels down there as well.
I'm not going to argue that the economic ripple effect of game night for the Suns. Or Disney on Ice night. Okay, fine.
Or Justin Timberlake, because he is talented.
He is.
I mean,
the man has
a
gift, I'm telling you. Would the citizens of Phoenix be better served by a private entity owning that building, promoting concerts, working out their individual deal with the Suns so that we, the taxpayers, aren't on the hook for it.
Let's ask you that on the open mic line, 602-200-2733. What do you think about this deal? Do you want it? You live in Phoenix. Good, bad? Will you show up at the five meetings that they're going to be having where the public can address their concerns?
Oh, five more, really?
I believe 602-200-2733. We want to hear from you on our open mic line, which is brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
Can I follow up real quick? Five new meetings on the arena. What, before the January, right? End of January, something like that?
I believe it's
what
five.
Would possibly change? Interesting.
Yeah.
The lead brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive, online at burgeford.com. The National Enquirer, the parent company, says they paid off a porn star and a Playboy model to protect Trump during the campaign. So our question to you is, which is worse? Which is worse? Paying them off, and would that have affected the election, or the Access Hollywood tape, the grab them by the pee?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yeah, that whole National Enquirer. The parent company's called AMI, and you'll hear us refer to them as AMI.
Some interesting things coming out of that.
They have a cooperation agreement to avoid prosecution. We're going to tell you exactly what they claim they did, and would it have affected an election? Yeah, that's an interesting discussion. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but leave it to the wonderful folks at Vitamin Water. This is good on them, right? Got a bet for you. For $100,000, could you go a year without your smartphone?
Could you go a year? Okay, if somebody starts saying, leave your smartphone at home when you come to dinner tonight, or leave your smartphone at home when you go to work, or you go to run errands. Did your heart start beating a little faster? Mm. Right? Did your breath start getting a little shorter?
You know people?
I don't know about that.
Because I do. That if their phone battery dies, or from time to time, no, the screen goes black, it has a glitch in it, and they lose their you-know-what.
Oh, yeah.
They come unglued.
I'm the one that accidentally leaves it at home all the time, and I'm like, okay, yeah. All right, whatevers.
Oh, my God, you have to drive home without a phone? What if Martians attack and you can't call somebody? Anyway,
Vitamin Water, and I think it's an unusual offer, challenge, if you will, that they're putting out there, because it's not necessarily a company you would think about that's trying to tackle the cultural plague of being addicted to your smartphone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're doing here. They're getting some play out of this. They're willing to pay anyone $100,000
$100,000.
If you can go an entire year without your smartphone.
Hmm.
They're calling it a scroll-free life. Okay?
There's got to be people out there right now like, I've been doing this for years.
I'll take $100,000.
Yeah.
If you go 6 months, you know, you kind of break there at month seven, you'll get about $10,000. And the reason why they're doing this is that they've got some clarifications as to what rules you would have to follow. So it means no internet, no texting, obviously, on a phone. It clarifies that tablets also aren't allowed.
That was
going to break it for
I
you.
I just tapped out.
You're also not allowed to use somebody else's smartphone.
Okay. But what if I get a flat tire? I'm going to die on the side of the road because no one's ever going to come. They're not gonna
happen. The company did say, though, that a lie detector test will be involved. Uh-huh.
Because they're obviously not going to trust you.
Think about it. How do you verify this?
Almost impossible. Listen, good on them, Vitamin Water. It's a good stunt.
Yeah.
But it leads to the broader discussion about how connected we are to smartphones. And I would turn around and say that having a smartphone and the positives that it brings, we've laid out some of the negatives. But can we acknowledge that smartphones, this ability to walk around with a thing in the palm of your hand that has more computing power in it than, you've heard this story before, than the original lunar landing did, you know, the entire module that we went to space with, you've got more computing power in your hand. That's not necessarily a bad thing. That you can navigate through the world easier. You can do all these things that a smartphone, there's a lot of positives to it. Can we acknowledge it's not all bad?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
But here's the thing. It's not as though you're going to have to go without a cell phone.
So I can have I have a box somewhere. Can I break out the flip phone?
No, they'll give you one. They'll give you like a 1996 era cell phone that only like makes and receives calls.
I got a Motorola flip phone. You get a text, but you had to go like on the number. I go 1, 2, 3 to get through the letters. You had to scroll through all the letters.
Remember that
on the numbers, you had to do the alphanumeric, and you had to hook, and you have to go all the way around again. Capitals, lowercase, numbers. Come on! I just want a T.
Vitamin Water also says though that if you are required to use a smartphone for work, or if you've got these other commitments, like what if little Riley needs me, kind of thing, then you need not apply. But I think it also is highlighting. One, the addiction we have to these devices.
Oh, yeah.
And two, I would also start to see this, though, Bruce, as a bit of a turning point. I'm not saying that people are going to start trashing their Androids or their iPhones anytime soon.
No.
But I think what you're starting to see is a bit of a retreat. It was go full-blown ahead with technology, the latest, the greatest, the shiny object dangled over here. I need it, I need it, I need it.
Sure.
And even in social media, you know, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snap, you know, LinkedIn, whatever it may be. You're starting to see people retreat and not use those social media avenues as much.
Without a doubt.
I think you're starting to see some people that would much rather go back to the old cell phone that you have in a shoebox somewhere.
I do. I have them.
So
I'm willing to sell them.
This is kind of playing into that. I think we're starting to pull back a little bit, and Vitamin Water is just touching upon it and apparently offering up a whole huge stack of cash to do it.
Yeah, I'm a no on that.
A hard no?
I'm a hard no on that.
I
mean, if I couldn't use the navigation app, I would just spend, an entire year driving around lost.
With maps.
I mean, you have your AAA trip tick. You're going
to talk about distracted driving.
Apparently, we're supposed to make a turn in about 3 inches.
Right,
I don't know how far that is.
I missed it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, man. What are you doing? Reading a map?
The latest example of the Trump campaign in court. And, of course, it's dragged the National Enquirer into it. How does that all come together? We'll tell you about it next.
Station KTAR News.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
All right. So here's an interesting question, and it's coming out of the revelations that yesterday federal prosecutors announced that they struck up a non-prosecution agreement. I think it involves cooperation, for lack of better terms, with the National Enquirer. Their parent company is called American Media Inc., or AMI, regarding the National Enquirer's role in securing and paying hush money with Michael Cohen to women who accused Donald Trump of affairs.
All right.
Is that a factual statement?
I think that's a factual statement. You know the Playboy playmate who...
McDougal.
Who allegedly had an affair with Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the National Enquirer, this is how they operate.
Okay.
They go after a story. Okay.
Well, this could be a big front page story, right?
And they offer her money, exclusive rights to her story. She then takes the money and signs like a non-disclosure agreement, non-compete. She can't tell anybody
else
the story.
Can't tell anybody else the story. It wouldn't be worth anything.
She's just taking money from the National Enquirer to tell them her story. So they get her to sign on the dotted line. They hand over a bunch of cash, and then they kill the story.
They never run it.
It's called catch and kill.
Okay.
And what we're finding out now is that AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer, paid off women to help the president.
The U.S. Attorney's Office announced a cooperation agreement with AMI, the company that publishes the National Enquirer. Prosecutors say just 2 months after Trump announced he was running for president, he met with Enquirer CEO and publisher David Pecker and Michael Cohen. And according to just-released court documents, Pecker offered to help deal with negative stories about the presidential candidate's relationships with women.
And he did. And according to those documents, it was at the direction of one or more members of the Trump campaign in order to influence the election.
So they were coordinating in some way, shape, or form. Does it violate campaign finance laws? Heck if I know. So let's get away from the legality of
okay,
it.
Good.
Because Michael Cohen's going to jail for it. How's that? And the National Enquirer is cooperating in whatever that means. If the stories would have come to light, if the National Enquirer had not, what do you call it again? What is it? Catch and killed.
The story.
The McDougal story. If Stormy Daniels had not signed a non-disclosure agreement and taken the hush money.
Of $150,000.
And those stories came out in the week, or it was within 2 weeks of the election 2 years ago. Would that have changed anything? Because keep in mind, would it have changed the way they voted? Here's why I say that. The Access Hollywood tape, I moved on her like a bee. You can grab them by the P. That tape had already come out.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make people vote against him.
Are you kidding me? Of course it did.
Really?
Absolutely it did.
You think that hurt him?
That video almost sunk his presidency. You had people that were ready to jump ship because of that video. Mike Pence among them.
Mike Pence literally, he acted like he did in the meeting the other day. He became a manila folder against a beige wall.
That video had profound impact.
Well, and that
Hold
video,
on, let me finish. That video had profound impact on this campaign. Yes, Pamela, but he still won. And the reason why I think he won was because James Comey came out mere weeks or days before the election and said he was reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton. That is what handed, in my opinion, Donald Trump the victory, not he won it on his own or that the Access Hollywood video didn't hurt him. It hurt him tremendously. Now, would this story about Karen McDougal
gone even farther?
Hurt him even more? I don't think so, and here's why.
Ooh.
It's the National Enquirer.
You think people wouldn't have believed it?
I wouldn't have believed it. It's the National Enquirer.
Well, but
my grandma always had the National Enquirer and the Sun.
Yeah.
Like the two tabloid kind of newspaper magazines. And I always read them about the werewolf boy
and the aliens and stuff. And there's no argument. You're right. The National Enquirer headline was, the incredible wolf boy is on the loose again.
Yeah.
Or frog baby born to woman. Right. The crazy stories. Right. But we know now that these tabloid journal, because, I mean, would you not throw TMZ kind of in with it?
No.
You wouldn't.
No,
you
I
think
would
TMZ is different than The Enquirer.
Absolutely.
Oh, I
don't.
I think they're all the same.
Oh, I think TMZ is most definitely different.
Because
than
here's my argument. My argument is that the Access Hollywood tape that came to light of Donald Trump, what they called it, locker room talk. I don't know if you remember this back then. Steve Bannon thought it was great. Steve Bannon says that tape won them the election. That's what he believes.
It's also Steve Bannon.
Would actual allegations in firsthand of women who Donald Trump cheated on while his wife was pregnant with their son. One is talk, the other is action. Would that have driven people away? One is locker room talk, but another is sleeping with porn stars. That's
another
different.
Is like you hear the audio and there's some video with the Access Hollywood.
Yeah, I remember
this
that.
Is just her word versus his word in the National Enquirer.
Mm.
It would not have helped. Let me tell you, this is not something the Trump
not
campaign would have wanted to deal with.
Fair enough.
So that's why there was the catch and kill. But I don't think it would have been as damaging.
Mm.
And I do think that video was quite damaging.
I don't know. We tend to believe those women now, don't we? Why wouldn't we believe them then? Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal.
A lot of time has passed.
Okay.
And we've had the opportunity to dive into it beyond just the National Enquirer.
Would it have changed anything? Historians will look back on this and blush. California. Oh, my God. They want to tax residents for texting. Oh, for the love of God. We're going to talk about it coming up next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
Okay, let's acknowledge it's one of these kind of uniquely California stories, which let us beat up on the state of California, or the People's Republic of California.
All right, great, let's do it.
Yeah. So
they make it easy.
Back in the olden days, all right, there were taxes on phones, okay? And they generated revenue from your landline. Well, fast forward to 2018, there's like six people that still have a landline. And the state of California says we're missing out on this revenue. So what can we do? Therefore, some genius came up with the idea, well, we can make up for the lost revenue by taxing text messages.
Yeah, so you got California's Public Utilities Commission that is looking at this. They're considering it. It is not a done deal yet, but it is definitely something that they're kicking around. And they're kicking around it, Bruce, for the very reasons that you've talked about. They used to make up money and have this little tax, you know, that would
come from... Like every phone call, right?
Well, not for every phone call, but that would come from having a landline in your home. And so, you know, when you get your... Now it's when you get your cell phone bill.
Bill, right?
There are all these taxes and fees.
Sure.
You're like, well, what the heck does that go to? That's kind of what the texting tax would be, because that tax used to come from those who had landlines. But since fewer and fewer people have landlines,
the money dried up.
The tax revenue that they used to get to help the low-income residents have some sort of phone service is drying up, because fewer people are actually, A, having landlines, or B, even making phone calls. What do people do? You almost exclusively text.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of people do.
I don't talk on a phone. I'm an example of why the state of California is losing tax revenue. I don't talk on a phone. Now, here is, I mean, this is just so quintessentially Californian. Because you know that if, and I think there is... I'm at 8% chance this happens. Okay?
Really? It's California.
Oh, I think the backlash. Even the biggest bleeding heart, Birkenstock wearing, tree hugging liberal California is going to go, wait, whoa. You want to tax my text messages to the other members of Greenpeace? No, they're going to revolt
PETA?
Over that.
Yeah, right.
My PETA group that we get together and hold seances for the squirrels with? No, we're not going to pay for that. But the minute if they tried to do this, you would have an entire industry. Think of the tech industry in California that would come up with a way around it, because they're already saying that iMessage, and most of you probably don't know the difference between the green and the blue texts you see on your iPhone. iMessage would be exempt. WhatsApp would be exempt. Facebook Messenger would be exempt.
The way it's written, this wouldn't be a tax for services like Apple iMessage or Facebook Messenger, but for text messages sent on your cell phone.
So they're saying, hey, you're making fewer phone calls. There are less landlines. We still need to be able to provide this service. And the service being to low-income individuals. And that money has to come from somewhere. In 2011, $670 million was budgeted to subsidize poor users. In 2017, Bruce, it was almost $1 billion.
Wow. The CPUC says the money needs to come from somewhere. If it doesn't come in the form of a text tax, you may see higher charges elsewhere.
Like voice messaging.
I was going to say, they're just going to find a way to screw you in a different way. Let's be honest. But it strikes me that there is a fundamental, the problem you have with, play along with me. People have been texting now for a while. I believe it's been 100 years. It's probably been closer to 10. Okay. How do you retroactively go back? And something that people believe they've been doing relatively for free, unencumbered by government tax, and then say, by the way, we're going to start taxing on that. You have a revolt. Think of it this way. If all of a sudden the city of Phoenix decided that the 51 was a toll road, how do you think that would go over? Wait a minute. I've been driving up and down this road for 20 years, and now you want to charge me $1.50 every time I go
on it? I know how
that
would go. The reason being because 1 year on April Fool's, that was the KTAR joke.
Yeah.
That overnight, if you were going to drive on the 101, the toll was $1.01. The 202 was $2.02. And we had a phone line where people could call.
People.
Oh, my gosh. People thought it was true.
They would show up with burning torches and pitchforks at city council meetings. Again, even as bleeding heart liberal as Californians may be, I think you talk about taxing their texts, they'll get over that really quick.
Well, they're going to actually be voting on it in late January, so stay tuned. Because so goes California?
So when I go to visit in California, will my texts be taxed when I go over there?
I think it's your service wherever you pay for it, which would be here.
So everybody get phones outside of the state of California.
Oh my gosh, look at you.
I'm always looking for a way around it. The power of the Me Too movement being felt in the halls of Congress of new legislation that might hold them accountable for once. We'll talk about it next.